This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome to Finding Your Identity in Your Autism Journey, the podcast where we explore complexities, breakthroughs, and unfiltered realities of the lives as touched by autism. I'm your host, Ruth Castle, here to guide you through heartfelt stories, expert insights, and empowering conversations. Whether you're a parent or a sibling, an educator, or an advocate, this is your space to find community, ask the hard questions, and uncover new possibilities. Let's dive in. Today's episode of Finding Your Identity in Your Autism Journey is brought to you today by LifeWave X39 Patches. As a parent of a child with autism, I am always looking for new tools that truly make a difference. Since my son has started using the LifeWave X39 Patches, we have noticed incredible improvements. More joint attention, less aggression, and a reduction in his autism-related symptoms. I have started using them myself, and they've truly been a game changer for my energy, my focus, and my mood. These innovative patches use light to gently support your body's natural energy flow. For better wellness, try them out today and see a difference in yourself and even your kiddo. So you guys can visit my link below in the show notes to learn more and to support the show. Welcome back to Finding Your Identity in Your Autism Journey. I'm your host, Ruth Castle, and today we are going to be diving into an important topic, pregnancy and birth experiences that research has linked to a higher likelihood of autism, especially when we're talking about meconium exposure. You may have heard of this term before, but what does it really mean? And how does it connect to autism? This part one of a two-part series. In the next episode, we're going to be exploring C-sections and whether they play a role in autism risk. But today, we're going to be focusing on meconium exposure and what the research is telling us. Let's get into it. What is meconium? How is it linked to autism? Is probably some of your guys' questions. What exactly is it, meconium? Well, it is a baby's first stool. It's thick and sticky and usually passed after birth. But sometimes it is passed while the baby is still in the womb. And when this happens, can mix with the amniotic fluid, creating what is called meconium stain, amniotic fluid, or MSAF. In some cases, babies inhale or swallow the fluid, which can lead to Meconium aspiration syndrome, or MAS. This can cause breathing difficulties and in some cases, oxygen deprivation. Now, here's where the autism connection comes in. Research suggests that children who were exposed to meconium before or during birth have a higher likelihood of being diagnosed with autism compared to those who weren't exposed. They're still looking at a lot that we don't know, but let's take a look at why this might be happening. For me, this topic really hits close to home because my son, there was complications during his delivery. My pregnancy was pretty good throughout, but at the end, the delivery was not great. And I was in labor for 36 hours. My water had broke. It was broken, you know, the whole time I was in labor because I went to the hospital once my water broke. When my water broke, I was like, why is my TMI but chunky and like brown? It was a light brown color. I thought when water broke, it was just water. Well, that the reason why, and I found out when I got to the hospital and I was telling them, you know, because he's my first kid, I have no experience on maybe water does look like that, you know, but no. They told me that's what it was called.
Meconium.
And I was like, well, you know, what does that really mean? You know, like, I don't understand what's going on. At the time, what they told me, they're like, well, your birthing plan is now going to have to change. You're not going to have, you have to do this now. You're going to have to get an epidural. You know, they made it seem much more, which it was. It was a lot more serious at that point. And it made it seem like they were going to, you know, not let me be in labor as long as I was. And they were going to have to take him if I didn't progress at a certain period of time, you know, to a natural labor via C-section. And these are things that I didn't want. And so his birth was a lot more than just, you know, the water breaking. I did have to end up having an emergency C-section because of the stresses that was put on during delivery. And, you know, one of the things that they said when they were talking about meconium in his amniotic fluid was that he would have to be taken to the ICU. We had to make sure he was aspirated. He didn't breathe it in. And, you know, these are all concerns. Like, I'm like, oh my goodness, like, what is happening? But so I will share a little bit more about my birthing. It was, his delivery was a very hard delivery. Like I said, my water broke and I noticed that it looked different. And that's when they told me that it was meconium in the amniotic fluid and that my birth plan was going to change. But also I was experiencing, you know, like false labor and a bunch of other like labor symptoms before, and it was all due because of the hurricanes that year. We had a lot of hurricanes back to back, and the barometric pressure made him drop sooner. And so at the end of my pregnancy, you know, there was a lot going on because of the barometric pressure. And when I gave birth, it was right after Hurricane Ian, and there was a lot of women giving birth during that time. So since there was a lot of things going on, my OBGYN was not present and I did not have my midwife team because there were so many babies born the day my son was born because of the hurricanes. And I had the on-call doctor. Long story short, I had been in labor for quite some time. At that point, I want to say it was like 33-hour mark I had been pushing, and there was no doctor present. But at that point, my body was doing the pushing. It starts just doing it naturally. Since my OBGYN was not available, they had the on-call doctor come in, and the on-call doctor had me to stop pushing. He's like, because my son's head was coming out of face, and then also with the meconium,
you know, he could not be delivered without people being there. And that's what was pretty much was happening. And he needed to be repositioned because how he was coming out of the birth canal, it wasn't good for him. So they had to take me down for emergency C-section. Taking me down to emergency C-section, they can make sure that they can do the procedure that they need to do when it comes to meconium. When they did the C-section, you know, you go down and so they're prepping me, getting me ready, and they have to reposition my son, basically pushing him back inside of me because how he was positioned. And I scream because I felt everything. And they said I shouldn't have felt everything. So they just thought I had not enough from my epidural. So they gave me the max dose that I could have. And then they proceed to cut me for my C-section. And I scream again after they've given me the max dose. So, but before this with the epidural, I had questioned it to my nurse that was with me in the room, because the whole time I started swelling really bad during like my delivery, like really bad. I even have photos, like my face is so swollen, my arms and my hands. And really like asking my nurse, like, why is it so hard for me to breathe? I feel like somebody is like sitting on my chest. I can't breathe. And I felt so sleepy. I was like, is that normal? She was the rudest nurse ever. I mean, she's like, you're not getting a C-section. You just like that. She wouldn't even go get the, she didn't even look. She didn't know that my son was coming faced or anything. She's like, how can you feel your contractions? I kept feeling my contractions. She said I shouldn't be able to feel it. And she would walk over and just push the pump for the epidural. And I was like, and it just made me more sleepy and I couldn't breathe. Anyway, so getting back to when they cut me, I scream again, and the anesthesiologist said there's no way she should have felt that. So they lift me and set me up on the operating table so they can see, you know, the placement of my epidural. And a thing that you never want to hear said was said. The anesthesiologist says, oh my God. Her epidural is in the wrong placement and is going in the wrong direction. So the reason why I was having a shortness of breath and I was swelling so bad was because it wasn't going down. It was going up and I couldn't move my arms. I had like limited mobility for my upper body, which wasn't typical, is what they kept saying before they found that. So on top of having the max dose of, for my weight and my height of the drug for the epidural, they did a spinal tap. And the spinal tap, then they were able to do what they needed to do to get my son out for his delivery of C-section. So when my son was born and having the meconium, he came out and they aspirated him. They took him to the ICU for, it was 4 hours. Now, my son was full term. He was 8 pounds, 3 ounces, and almost 22 inches long. He was 21 3/4 long. He passed all of his, you know, normal birth testing at birth. But they did have to, you know, keep an eye on him because of the meconium, making sure that he wasn't aspirated, he didn't breathe it in, you know, checking for oxygen deprivation. In the back of my mind, I always, you know, after learning more about meconium and thinking, even not knowing much about meconium at the time after he was born, you know, I kept bringing that up to his pediatrician, you know, at his monthly well visits, like making sure that he was hitting his milestones. And because my thoughts were, you know, anytime you're aspirated, you have the potential to have oxygen deprivation, which harms the brain, and babies' brains are so delicate. So this was always, you know, one of my main concerns. And years later, looking back, I do think that this is a contributing factor to the severity level of my son's autism. And because it's not a one thing that I believe that we're exposed to that causes the spectrum that we experience with our loved ones. If you are a parent listening and you've experienced meconium exposure during your delivery. You are not alone. And just because your child had meconium exposure does not automatically mean that they will have autism. But awareness is key, and early intervention can make all the difference. So why does meconium exposure seem to increase autism risk? Researchers have a few possibilities that gives us some explanations. So for one of my fears, what I just said, was the lack of oxygen, hypoxia. If a baby inhales the meconium and it causes difficulties breathing and lower oxygen levels, oxygen deprivation can affect the brain's development, which may contribute to neurodevelopmental differences. Okay, so two, inflammation and immunity response. The body reacts to meconium in ways that may trigger inflammation, which some studies link to autism spectrum disorder, which is, you know, very common. A lot of our kids, it's a inflammatory response. A neural inflammation is a major area of research in the autism studies right now. Three, the gut-brain connection. Some researchers believe that birth trauma, including meconium exposure, may affect the gut microbiome. Since the gut and the brain are closely connected, this could play a role in the neural development. Again, there is so much that we're learning about these factors, you know, could help explain the connection between meconium exposure and autism. So what can you do if you're currently pregnant or if your child had meconium exposure? Well, if you're pregnant, let's talk to your OB about the risk of meconium exposure and the steps you can take to reduce those chances of, you know, that. As if your child had meconium exposure at birth, keep an eye on their developmental milestones. Speech delays, sensory integration, and motor challenges can be early signs to watch for. Seek early intervention if needed, whether that's speech therapy, occupational therapy, or developmental screenings. The earlier that you can help your kids, the better. Every child's journey is different, but being informed and being proactive can make all the difference. If you want to learn more about today's topic or find support, there are some helpful resources. I'm going to be posting some in the show notes, research articles and studies like meconium aspiration in neural development in autism and birth complications. Also some early intervention developmental screenings that's through the CDC and early childhood techniques assistance center. So all of these will be shared links in the show notes, so be sure to check them out. And this is just one piece of the puzzle. In our next episode, we're going to tackle another big topic, C-sections and their potential link to autism. Are they really increasing the autism rate, or is there more to the story? We'll break down the science and what parents need to know. So if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss it. And if this episode was helpful for you, please share it with a friend or leave a review. It helps us reach more parents like you. Thank you for being here and reminding. And remember, your journey is unique and you're never alone. Until next time, take care. Thank you for tuning in to Finding Your Identity in Your Autism Journey. I hope today's episode inspired you, brought you some clarity, or simply reminding that you are not alone. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and if you enjoyed this conversation, leave a review and share it with someone who might need it. Until next time, remember, your story matters, your voice matters, and together we can navigate this journey one step at a time.